Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Broadband Exchange, the podcast from your friends at Telecompetitor. I'm Ian Desher, Pivot's Director of Media and Story and Managing Editor of Telecompetitor. It's time to review this week's broadband news. Let's get into it. We'll start, as we often do, in Washington, D.C., where the FCC took up a pair of policy questions at their June meeting last week. First, the commission proposed rules aimed at state and local permitting delays. The notice of proposed rulemaking looked at a 120-day shot clock for applications involving public rights of way, along with limits on construction application fees. Chairman Brendan Carr argued that long delays and excessive fees can raise deployment costs and leave communities waiting for service. Commissioner Ana Gomez supported moving the item forward, but she also raised questions about local authority and whether the FCC has the power to overrule certain state and local processes. At the same meeting, the FCC opened debate around the E-rate program. The discussion centered partly on whether the program's mission should be reconsidered in light of student screen time. Carr suggested E-rate should be reoriented as the way students use connected devices has changed. Gomez dissented in part, arguing that connectivity for schools and libraries remains an ongoing responsibility and that classroom behavior is not in the FCC's purview. E-rate is an issue that's likely to draw a lot of comments on both sides. Staying with the FCC, the commission also closed its AWS-3 spectrum auction with more than $3.5 billion in gross winning bids. Auction 113 ran for 72 rounds and included 17 qualified bidders. The auction covered 200 licenses in the 1695 to 1710 MHz, 1755 to 1780 MHz, and 2155 to 2180 MHz bands. The spectrum had been won in 2014, but the winning bids were later defaulted or withdrawn, so the licenses remained in the FCC's inventory. The FCC said as much as $3.3 billion from the auction proceeds would help cover funding borrowed to support the Rip and Replace program and other Commerce Department programs. As you know, many providers are still dealing with the cost of removing equipment as part of the Rip and Replace program. Now let's move to broadband funding, where several state and federal opportunities were in the news. In Vermont, the Community Broadband Board urged eligible residents to apply for the Affordable Long Drop program before it ends in September. The program was designed for homes that may have fiber available nearby, but face unusually expensive or non-standard installation costs. In some cases, the drop itself can cost thousands of dollars, creating a final barrier between availability on paper and a working connection inside the home. The program was funded at $6.1 million through the Capital Projects Fund, and participating providers include NEK Broadband, CV Fiber, EC Fiber, DV Fiber, Franklin Telephone Company, Maple Broadband, and WCVT. It's a unique program and something that will help some providers in Vermont make that critical last mile or even last few hundred feet. California also had several last mile grant windows on the calendar. The California Department of Technology said application windows for three California Advanced Services Fund programs would open July 1st. That's this week, of course, with a fourth opening October 1st. The July programs include tribal technical assistance, broadband adoption, and broadband public housing. The Broadband Infrastructure Grant Account, which supports last-mile and middle-mile infrastructure, will begin accepting applications in October. And nationally, the NTIA opened applications for two tribal broadband funding opportunities. Together, the Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program and Native Entities Grant Program will make $790 million available to tribal and native communities. The application window runs through September 17th, with awards expected on a rolling basis beginning in spring 2027. The money can support broadband connectivity on tribal lands, infrastructure availability, telehealth, distance learning, affordability, and related activities. Next, let's look skyward. Amazon, Globalstar, Iridium, and Telesat formed together the Space Connect Association, a new trade group representing the non-geostationary satellite sector. David Reddle, previously with the NTIA, was named executive director of Space Connect, and Julie Kearney, the first chief of the FCC's Space Bureau, became its general counsel. The association said it will advocate for modern licensing processes, efficient spectrum access, and responsible operating practices. Notably, Starlink is not a member of the association, at least according to their press release. Even so, the new group reflects how quickly the NGSO sector has moved from emerging technology to policy priority. Satellite broadband is increasingly part of the connectivity conversation, as you know all too well, especially in rural and hard-to-serve areas. But the policy framework around spectrum, licensing, and space stewardship is still catching up. That satellite theme also appeared in an enterprise connectivity story this week. Big Leaf Networks launched its multi-path broadband platform, developed with Connected Solutions Group. The service combines Verizon 5G fixed wireless access and Starlink satellite broadband on Big Leaf's intelligent network performance platform. The interesting part I thought about this offering is that the two connections don't simply sit in an active and backup relationship. Big Leaf said both Verizon 5G and Starlink remain active together, with traffic routed based on latency, jitter, and packet loss. The platform also includes same IP failover, circuit bonding, and multiple static IPs. For distributed businesses that rely on voice, video, VPN, cloud, and transaction systems, the promise is performance management across different access technologies. In other provider news, Grain Management said it would merge Ritter Communications and Great Plains Communications into a single company operating under the Wright Fiber brand, which originally had just been a Ritter Communications brand. Ritter is based in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and Great Plains Communications is based in Blair, Nebraska. Both companies have more than a century of history, and both are owned by Grain Management. The combined company will be led by current Ritter CEO Heath Simpson. Once finalized, Wright Fiber is expected to serve more than 400 communities across 20 states, connect 300,000 homes and businesses, and operate a 28,000-mile fiber network. Grain said the company would pursue both organic growth and acquisitions while positioning itself as a partner to communities, businesses, and large data center operators. We also saw a customer experience move from Comcast's Xfinity. The company introduced same-day Wi-Fi equipment delivery for new customers in select cities, with plans to expand to other markets by early next year. Customers can have equipment delivered to their homes or pick it up at an Xfinity store the same day they sign up. The Xfinity app then supports gateway setup, device connection, Wi-Fi personalization, and home network management. This Xfinity move is about meeting modern customer expectations. Thanks to companies like Amazon, people, especially in more populated areas, are used to same-day delivery, instant activation, and app-based setup. Broadband providers may not all have Comcast scale, but the lesson is worth noting: near-instant gratification is becoming part of the competitive landscape. Staying with network expansion, Logix Fiber Networks announced a multi-terabit wavelength route for an enterprise customer in Texas. The route enables scalable connectivity between Houston, Austin, Dallas, and Fort Worth. Logix said its network spans more than 300,000 fiber miles and connects to thousands of enterprise locations and more than 80 data centers in the Lone Star State. The announcement fits into a larger pattern that we're seeing. AI, cloud computing, and other high-capacity services are driving demand for these long-haul and regional fiber networks. We've covered similar infrastructure stories in North Dakota, the South, and other markets where operators are building for hyperscale and enterprise growth. Now we'll move to Telecompetitor editor-at-large Joan Ingebretson's excellent reporting on fiber mergers and acquisitions. Joan covered a PwC report on how broadband providers can make themselves more attractive if they decide to sell. PwC said buyers are likely to place a premium on rural operators with built infrastructure, contiguous footprints, proven compliance capabilities, and a credible path to scale. In other words, it's not enough to have fiber in the ground. Buyers also want service areas that fit together, operations that can mature, penetration rates that can improve, and growth plans that don't depend entirely on future grant funding. The report also said nearly 50 private equity firms are actively deploying capital into U.S. telecom. Financial buyers generated 20% of deal volume so far in 2026, up from 11% in fiscal 2025. The best positioned operators, it concluded, are the ones that can show discipline, compliance strength, and a realistic growth story. And finally, we'll close with Telecompetitor's own State of AI in Rural Broadband study. If you listened to last week's podcast episode, we brought you part of the webinar based around that study and its findings, and we're going to share some additional results here. The study found that rural broadband providers expect AI to matter even though most are still early in the adoption process. Of the 132 providers surveyed, 91% said they expect AI to have a significant impact on their own companies and on the wider industry. At the same time, nearly half described their AI use as limited or informal. About half said they were experimenting, and only 1% said they had integrated AI into core systems or workflows. Strategy, it turns out, is a major gap. 82% of providers said they had no defined or formal AI plan, and only 4% had a formal AI strategy tied to business priorities. That may sound daunting, but it also suggests that many rural providers are in similar places. They know AI is important, they see potential uses, they may even be testing tools, but turning that interest into a strategy is still the next step. The most common implemented use case was internal knowledge-based search, followed by targeted marketing. Providers are also evaluating cyber threat detection and network monitoring. The top challenge was a lack of internal skills or confidence using AI tools, followed by uncertainty about vendors and solutions. For rural broadband providers, the practical questions about AI are very human. Who owns the strategy? Who has time to test tools? Which vendors can be trusted? And how do small teams make progress without getting overwhelmed? And that's it for this week. Thank you for listening to the Broadband Exchange. You can read all the articles we mentioned today at telecompetitor.com. Feel free to drop us a line while you're there. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time.